And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I was told yesterday we have a new phone system, and it should work now. But evidently, I'll be the first one to try it out to see if I can take a phone call. So I've given a couple numbers over the last few weeks, but the main number is 903-586-5257. And that way we can test the phone system. But anyway, I was just kind of thumbing through some research this morning. I was thinking about an article that I read about some individuals that had severe knee pain. I think just about everybody that knows, especially if you're over the age of, say, 45 or 50, you may be just a little bit more attuned to knee pain, hip pain, hand, wrist. Anyway, came across this article right here from 1990. Come from the Townsend Letters. There was a study on people that had osteoarthritis. So just let me kind of flesh this topic out for a moment. I actually have several topics that I find interesting. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Well, can you hear me? I guess that's not going to work. This is a brand new phone system. I didn't know it was going to be brand new. Well, that's fine with me if it is. I'm just not aware. Maybe I pushed the button wrong. Anyway, let's go back to the study right here. This comes from the Townsend Letters for Doctors, February-March edition, 1990. I've always liked that journal. It gives you such a different take on what to do and how to do it. Let me try this one more time. That way we can kind of test the phone lines and see if they're working. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. I have a couple questions for you.
Well, I'm sorry. I can't hear you on the air. Evidently, this means it's not working. I'm so sorry. I can hear you coming from the speakerphone, but I can't hear you on the air at all. I'm sorry. Okay. So much for that. It doesn't work. You know what? What do you do when something doesn't work, right? You just do the very best you can with what you got. So let's just have a program today. And unfortunately, I won't be able to take phone calls until we can get this repaired or fixed. So here we go. So just play along with this as if it makes sense. They're finding out when they test the soil in many, many different countries, they can pretty much predict who's going to have arthritis, who's going to experience very significant joint pain. I know that you have seen fingers before where they have tremendous calcium deposits at the end of their fingers, and you think to yourself, how do they do basic, simple stuff where it requires their fingers? Well, there's a lot of people that don't. I watched a woman yesterday morning try to lift something that was very light, but her hands were in such pain she dropped it. And she said, oh, it's my hands. And so without saying anything, I knew it was most likely she's got very significant arthritis. I did ask her, though. I was asking her a question. Because you can always tell who grows up on a farm. Or usually you can. And I asked her, I said, by chance, did you grow up on a farm? And she said, no. She said, my dad did, though. And she was telling me about her father. And she said he opened a store called the Spud Nut Store. I said, I have never heard of that. What is a spud nut? She said, they're donuts, but they're made with potato flour or potatoes instead of wheat. I thought that was so interesting. Have you ever heard of that before? That was not anything that I was exposed to back in the 60s. But here's this article, and they're showing there's an inverse relationship between boron, and boron is a mineral or an element that's just naturally occurring. So they're saying that where the soil has more boron, you find the least amount of arthritis in people. Okay? So evidently boron is useful in some capacity. Now this next one, this comes from June 1990, again from the Townsend Letters. And the book that I'm getting this from is a book of my research. It comes from Melvin Werbach. It's called Nutritional Influences on Illness, a source book of clinical research. But I'm always impressed by this guy because he has to put this stuff together without the aid of a computer to quickly evaluate and organize the studies for him. So this is all done manually. The guy was a machine. Let me read this to you right here. Here's an experimental double-blind study. It comes from the Journal of Nutritional Medicine. The year's 1990. And so, I think the title of it is Boron and Arthritis, the Results of a Double-Blind Pilot Study. Maybe you haven't figured out why I'm sharing this information with you, but let me say it this way. Nobody outlives their joints. You can't. You want to keep them in great working order. That is your ability to continue to work and to be active and to do all those wonderful things that God has for you to do, all those things that He's set in front of you. But you've got to have a body that works well. So I would rather work on trying to keep your joints in good working order, or what I should say is this is actually a topic about arthritis. And so they had 15 patients, which I realize that's not a huge amount. But 15 patients, I'll take it. Let's see what we can learn from it. So they had 7 patients that received the medication, which was 6 milligrams daily of boron. Now, I kind of find this funny because what they used was 50 milligrams of borax. You know what borax is. So they used 50 milligrams of borax. That would be a tiny capsule. And from that, they were able to say, all right, that's going to have about 6 milligrams of boron in it. Or they used a placebo. After 8 weeks, which that's essentially 2 months, not bad if you're talking about the joints, 5 out of 7 patients in the experimental group rated themselves as subjectively improved compared to 1 out of 8 people on the placebo. All right. Now, you got to understand, placebos are still pretty powerful. Quite often, they're more powerful than drugs, because if you have this positive expectation that you're going to see improvement or you're going to be better, then sometimes that's just the way it is, which that may be an aspect of health that some people overlook. You've got to have enough faith to do what it takes to change the environment of your body to improve itself. And so it says there was a significantly greater improvement in the condition of all joints that were on the placebos. That were consuming the boron. And what they gave them is they gave them borax, as well as significantly less pain on passive movement when you took boron. However, now this part may be a little bit technical, but I still want to read it to you. However, since 3 boron and 2 placebo patients dropped out of the study. They started off with 20, but 5 people dropped out. And they said the reason that they dropped out is because they had what are called Herxheimer reactions. And that's when your body goes through a very unique type of a detox. And so boron is essential to the human body, and it plays a role in how you keep your joints in good working order. And so they're saying that typically people that are prone to rheumatoid arthritis, you've heard of that, that's an autoimmune disease where your immune system attacks the joints. If the rheumatoid goes on for a while, guess what's going to happen? You're going to eventually develop what's called osteoarthritis. That's just the wear and tear to the joints. The joint is going to wear out when it's chronically inflamed. And so the researchers say if they could only have talked the people in the that dropped out that had rheumatoid arthritis, if they'd only remained in the study, they would have improved too, if they hadn't given up so quickly. And I find that interesting, but that is something. People think that just because they hurt, that maybe they should drop out. Well, they're hurting anyway. Sometimes, have you ever heard that phrase that sometimes you can get worse before you get better? Okay. All right, here's another one right here. This comes from the Australian Academy of Science, Canberra, Australia, 1979. And get this right here. And just, these are clinical observations. It may not be the same as a double-blind, placebo-controlled, crossover, experimental study, but it's observational, clinical observations. I tend to believe all my patients when they tell me what happens to them. Of course, I like it when they tell me positive things, but you've got to take the negative too. If somebody says, Dr. Morgan, this whole thing's not working out for me. I gave up the alcohol and 40 glasses of sweet tea a day and the 12 Mountain Dews, and I feel worse. Well, I'm going, well, yeah, you're going to feel worse. That's called withdrawal. So sometimes a person feels worse, and that's a normal, good, healthy response when you're getting through something, okay? So they're just looking at boron supplementation. Boron's an element. And so they said that boron supplementation was effective for about 90% of arthritis patients. Folks, come on. Where are you going to find another study? Or where are you going to find something that's 90% effective for people that have osteoarthritis? I know there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of different variabilities that you could have per individual. Everybody's different. But if you get a 90%, if it's effective for 90% of the people that have very significant severe arthritis, that's a pretty good deal. Now, if I go on and read the clinical observation, here's what the doctor wrote. Most people, that's most, that's be more than 50%, I'm guessing, they had complete remission of symptoms if they just took it long enough. So you're probably asking me, well, what is the dose they took? Well, here it is right here. Patients normally took somewhere between 6 to 9 milligrams of elemental boron daily to achieve symptom relief. Okay? Well, what did they do after they were completely pain-free? Well, they followed with a maintenance dose of 3 milligrams a day. That kind of gives you the nuts and bolts of it. That comes from, there was an article written by Dr. Noonham. First initials are RE, arthritis or skeletal fluorosis and boron. Here's another one right here written by Dr. Newham. It's titled Boron Beats Arthritis. That's coming from the proceedings of the ANZAAS Academy of Sciences. I don't know what that abbreviation is for. That's interesting. When's the last time that you've heard this information before? Yes, and what you can do is you don't have to do this at all. If you want to take Tylenol 3, if you want to take ibuprofen, Aleve, aspirin, but there's a problem with all that. Okay, this comes from Pharmacological Research, 1978. They show if you want to approach your arthritic pain or the arthritis that you have in your body. If you want to take non-sterile anti-inflammatory drugs, well, guess what it does? It blocks proteoglycan synthesis. Now, you're probably wondering what I'm talking about there. Proteoglycan synthesis, that's the ground substance of all the cartilage in the body. You got that? Okay. And so if you take aspirin or Tylenol 3 or ibuprofen or Aleve, those are all non-inflammatory steroid, anti-inflammatory drugs. You can do that, but you're causing your cartilage to break down at a faster rate, and that's what pain is. Your body is breaking down faster than the ability to repair or to heal. All right? You with me on that? And so they're showing, here's a radical substance right here, and this comes from the Journal of Pharma Therapeutica, 1981, Volume 2, the 8th edition, pages 504 to 508. Anyway, it says there's a controlled clinical investigation in severe arthritis. And lo and behold, what did they use to help these people with arthritis rejuvenate their cartilage so they could become pain-free? Well, they used a substance called glucosamine sulfate. You got that? Glucosamine sulfate. Here's another one right here. And I'll read to you the doses in just a second because I want to give you the information where you can put it into use. What have you got? What do you have to lose if you're basically crippled from arthritis? You've got nothing to lose. Here's a journal in 1970. It's called Orthopedic Practice. Okay, it's a German journal, but it says they use glucosamine sulfate, and what do they do with it? they were able to repair and rebuild damaged cartilage. Oh, I can do it. I can do it just as good as you can. I can watch a person walk just like you can, and I can determine that person is in pain. And you can tell by the way a person moves, if they're favoring their knee joint, or what if they have a foot that hurts, or what if they have a bad hip joint or ball and socket joint. Well, you can tell by the way they move they're in pain. Well, folks, this is something that God has given us. It's called glucosamine sulfate. I haven't gotten to research on chondroitin sulfate or MSM, but here's the deal. Wouldn't you rather promote healing and repair instead of just a drug approach? Okay, what if we had a farm and the farm had weeds in the soil? Are you going to rely on massive doses of herbicides and pesticides and Roundup and chemicals that's just kill? You're just damaging the soil. You're completely destroying the health of the soil by doing stuff like that. And I realize what I'm saying is not going to come across as super popular to some people, but that's kind of the American way. We just have this mindset that if we're sick and we feel horrible, and if we have horrible arthritis, we just should take a drug to relieve the pain. Well, what are you doing to change the environment of the soil of your body? How are you making your cartilage healthier by doing that? The answer is you're not. Okay. Let me read this to you right here. Here's an experimental... Oh, and here's the... I'm reading the subtitle first, so I guess I'm kind of cheating, but it doesn't matter. Just whatever makes sense to you and to me. This comes from a current medical research opinion, 1982. That's a legitimate journal in 1982. I do not know if it's still around, but here's a subtitle. Administration may be more effective in relieving pain than non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, although pain relief may be slower. So they're kind of fleshing it out. What am I talking about? I'm talking about using what's called glucosamine sulfate. Okay? Here's the experimental double-blind study. They had 40 outpatients, and the people they selected, they had a bad knee. I mean, the knee was so painful. Have you ever seen somebody with a painful knee before? What if you tried to bend that knee? Well, if you do, they're probably going to punch you. I think if anybody knows that, that would be me. Okay, so here's what they did. They randomly, people that had really horrible knee arthritis or knee pain, probably couldn't bend it very well. They received either 1.5 grams of glucosamine sulfate or 1.2 grams of ibuprofen daily for 8 weeks. That's a boatload of ibuprofen, I think. Is that 400 milligram tablets of ibuprofen 3 times a day? Okay. So you have a 500 milligram capsule of glucosamine sulfate, and you're just taking 1 3 times a day. Or for all I know, maybe they took them 3 times all at once. Or all 3 capsules of the glucosamine sulfate. Maybe that's what they did. I don't know. This doesn't say. But here's the result right here. Because you're asking, with these 40 patients, what's going to give the relief of the pain? And of course, I need you to bear in mind, yeah, you can take ibuprofen. You can get relief of the pain. But it doesn't do anything to fix the problem. It does nothing to fix it, okay? It makes it worse is what it does. I don't know any physician that would call me on the radio right now and even argue with me on that point. That's what drugs are for, just for emergency intervention for the moment, but it's not going to do anything to help rebuild the cartilage, okay? Pain scores decrease faster during the first 2 weeks with ibuprofen. Okay, I get that. Yeah, that makes sense. I would expect that. So would you. Now, despite the slower rate of pain reduction, the decrease in pain scores with glucosamine sulfate, it continued throughout the trial period. Do you realize what that means is? The longer they took it, over 8 weeks, the better it got. At week number 8, the difference in pain between the two groups turned significantly in favor of the glucosamine sulfate. Do you know what that means, folks? That means the longer they took glucosamine as compared to ibuprofen, and this is at 8 weeks, all of a sudden those that invested all their energy on a natural compound that could actually rejuvenate and rebuild and heal the cartilage, they start doing better than those that were on ibuprofen. Now, do you get where I'm coming from on that? You got two choices here. We can either address the problem and we can try to promote healing of the cartilage, or turning the cartilage from sick and diseased and arthritic to healthy, or you can invest in something that's just going to give you a short-term pain relief, but it's going to destroy you. Okay? At week 8, the difference in pain between the two groups turns significantly in favor of the glucosamine. It says here that no significant differences were noted in swelling or in any of the other parameters monitored. It says minor complaints were noted by 2 patients on glucosamine and 5 patients on the ibuprofen. It didn't say what those are, but I could guess. I would guess it would be tummy troubles, like, great, when I take this, my stomach's on fire, it's upset. Anyway, I found that interesting right there. Let me see, what else did I come up with here? All right. I came across this other article, and I'm telling you, I really did like this right here. And I think this should be really good food for thought, so you tell me what you think about this. This is an article. It comes from April the 8th of 2018. Let me see if I can find the source of it, because I know some people actually like to look these things up. Okay. Oh, my goodness. This is too much right here. It says, okay, the article comes from September the 14th, 2007. It's from the journal Neuropsychological Development of Cognition, B in Aging and Cognition. Boy, that's so wordy. I'm so sorry. But you're probably asking me, you're saying, Dr. Morgan, why are you reading an article about cognition and aging? Well, here you go. Here it is right here. Okay, so the headline is creatine. Have you heard of creatine before? It's an amino acid. A lot of times they refer to the form called creatine monohydrate. That's probably the one that has the most research or studies behind it, at least what I've been able to uncover and read about. And right now, anybody can be a researcher. You can study anything you want. Just type it into the computer, and you'll come up with all these articles and research. Sometimes I'll just type in stuff like creatine monohydrate and then research. And you get all these articles. You can start sorting through and reading as much as you like. Okay, let me read the little paragraph that leads up to the article, and then I'll read the study to you. So the creatine, by the way, is found in red meat. Okay? Highest concentration of red meat, and I think seafood is number 2. So that's just an idea that when people eat red meat and when they eat seafood, maybe it has something that other foods do not have in higher concentration. Okay. Here's a start. If you suffer from normal and mild forms of memory loss, then you might benefit from a supplementation with what's called creatine monohydrate. They're saying it's available everywhere. It's dirt cheap. It's best known as a supplement for bodybuilders. That's what they take to make sure they have a much more efficient, better workout. They tend to be stronger. But it also stimulates the functioning of the brain cells involved in memory or in the function of memory. You get that? Okay. This is evident from a human study published by British scientists at the University of Chichester. Chichester. If I butchered that, forgive me. That was back in the year 2007. That's from the journal Aging, Neuropsychology, and Cognition. Okay? Here we go. Let me read this to you, and you tell me if you can extract something beneficial to you from this. I think I can. Here's the study. The researchers divided 32 subjects with an average age of 76 years into 2 groups. And so for 2 weeks, one group took 4 doses of 5 grams of creatine daily. So I'm guessing that means they took 20 grams of creatine a day for 2 weeks. The other subjects just took a placebo. Okay? A placebo does not contain creatine. For all I know, it was just an inert substance. Maybe it was sugar. Maybe it was something else. Maybe it was maltodextrin. Okay? But it wasn't anything therapeutic that they could measure that might cause a positive change. Okay. After 1 and 2 weeks of supplementation, the subjects were showed 10 photos of persons that had an indication of what their profession was. An hour later, the subjects gave the subjects 20 photos. The photographs that the subjects had seen before were included, and the subjects were asked to designate them. So they're testing the memory. Okay, I cannot show you the chart right here or the graph that shows the scores, but I'm telling you, very significant improvement in cognition and memory at week number 2. So you get the other point that I'm making here that I haven't discussed with you yet. It only took 2 weeks to see a most significant improvement in memory, short-term and long-term. I mean, this graph is like very, very impressive. Okay. Here's the mechanism right here. The explanation from our data so far as proposed has assumed that the effect of creatine supplementation is to make ATP synthesis more efficient. That's what the researchers write. And here's a quote. Now, I want you to get this right here. You do understand that energy production is the key to life. If you don't make enough energy, how does your body repair itself? How do you get back to a good place where your body can be in good working order? So I want you to listen to very, very carefully what the researchers are saying when they're looking at people that are the average age of 76. Just listen to this, and I quote, "There is no doubt that elderly people require more energy in order to carry out cognitive tasks than do younger individuals." Now, do you get that? As you get older, it takes more energy to help your brain to work properly. Do you get that? All right. And so we're talking about creatine monohydrate helping the body produce more energy. Here's another alternative explanation that one of the researchers wanted to make sure that was included in this study. And he's saying there may be a different mechanism here. So this is different than what I just read to you. It says the positive effects of creatine supplementation are due to the fact that the presence of creatine, it improves mitochondrial membrane stimulation. Okay? It's saying that basically you can cause the nerve cells in the brain to work a lot better because creatine causes the mitochondria. That's where all energy production takes place. To work all of a sudden much better, and you have more energy available for all the neurons or the nerve synapses. And so the result is you get much better production of a chemical, a neurotransmitter called dopamine. All right? I don't know if you know this, but when someone has Alzheimer's or dementia, or there's another neurological degenerative disease called Parkinson's disease. Well, those are hallmarks of less dopamine. You don't have enough. Usually when you have plenty of dopamine, you want to be around other people. You're very happy. You're very motivated. Actually, dopamine's kind of a motivational chemical. Well, guess what? Listen to this right here. This just kind of blows my mind. I'm so glad to know this stuff because I think this is useful. There's no telling how many people that are listening right now that would greatly benefit from this. Now get this. Research with individuals that actually have Parkinson's disease has shown that creatine supplementation results in increased concentration of brain dopamine. Folks, that's a big deal. Now, I'm not trying to tell you that I know exactly how that works, because I don't. But I'm telling you, when they give somebody with Parkinson's, which is a lack of dopamine, so if you have a lack of dopamine, you know what it's like to see somebody that has a tremor? Have you seen somebody shaking? It's pretty easy to spot. Like if you're sitting in church tomorrow morning and seven rows ahead of you, you see a lady, a sweet, sweet lady, and she can't stop her head from shaking. Or if she's if her hand's at rest, there's a tremor to it. Well, this is so interesting. You get better production of dopamine. That's why you have the tremors. That's why you have the shakes. Sometimes it's because you have a lack of dopamine. Well, here's one solution. Here it is. It's an amino acid. It's called creatine monohydrate. So individuals with Parkinson's disease, it shows right here in the research that creatine supplementation results in increased concentrations of brain dopamine. Oh my goodness. Going back to the mitochondria, this is me rambling for a bit. I don't even know how many people I've seen that have been severely damaged from vaccines. I'm not trying to start trouble. I'm telling you how it is. They didn't ask for the damage to take place, but sometimes the damage occurs on the level of the mitochondria. And when it does, oh my goodness, these are some exhausted, depleted individuals. We got to repair that. Well, maybe creatine might play some role in helping get through this. I read a quote the other day, and I know this is like old English talk, but I'm going to quote it exactly like I heard it or read it. That which costeth energy maketh energy. Do you get that? That means you have to make your body generate energy whether you want to or not. Or what I'm saying is whether you feel like it or not. If we have to wait for a person to feel really good before they start taking action to improve their energy production, well, we're going to wait forever until they die. It's going to be too late. Make your body serve you. So what if the only thing you considered today was this topic about creatine and then exercising? Make your body do the very thing that you don't want to do. I get it. You're too tired. Okay. Let me finish my dopamine talk here. So when they give people with Parkinson's creatine, it increases dopamine. This is a little bit more information on that topic right there. I'm reading what the researcher's quote is. This would aid cognition. Cognition is your ability to have your mind be clear, as opposed to forgetful and brain fog. Do you know what it's like for your brain to be so tired you can't even process anything? Your brain is exhausted. I'm trying to help you with that. So this is what the researcher says about creatine and dopamine. This would aid cognition because dopamine is a neurotransmitter that plays a major role in working memory tasks, while glutamate is an excitatory neurotransmitter that at high levels can disrupt cognitive performance due to excitatory of neurons. That would be what MSG does to you. Here's the conclusion right here. In conclusion, we can say that creatine monohydrate supplementation had a beneficial effect on the cognitive task used in this study. That means their memory got better. The researchers go on to write, it is possible that longer periods of loading, that means longer than 2 weeks, the study was only for 2 weeks, may be more beneficial and aid even the complex central executive tasks of the brain. Dude, I like that. I'm sorry, if you're trying to call today, the new phone system, I can't get it to work. It's probably just me. Well, you know what? Maybe I'm pushing the wrong button. Let me come closer and look at it. No, I think I was pushing the right button. Anyway, I'm so sorry. I know I was supposed to test today. Evidently, I do not know. Let me try one more time. Here we go. As far as I know, I have everything turned on. Okay, can you hear me okay?
Oh, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you on the phone speaker, but that's not transmitting. You're calling from Alice, Texas. Is that correct? I sure do. That's where all the poor people live. I'm joking. I'm sorry. This is not transmitting to the airwaves, so it's just me talking. I apologize. I'm going to have to ask you just to hang up, and I'm going to...
Could you talk about ALS, please?
I sure will.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay. This morning before I came on the air, I was looking at some research, and I don't have it right in front of me, but they were talking about one of the things that contributes to ALS is a severe calcium deficiency. I realize that's a different take on that. ALS is an autoimmune disease where your body attacks the those nuclei in the brain that control motion and movement, things like that. One of the greatest stories that I think that I've ever read before that I just find phenomenal and inspiring is the story of Lou Gehrig. Lou Gehrig was an amazing individual, and he's like the rest of us. There's no such thing as a perfect individual. Everybody has faults, but he was an incredible, incredible human being. Well, Lou Gehrig died from the complications, much younger than he should have, of a condition called ALS. And I know that there was a, and the reason I'm bringing that up is there was a part of his life that he relied probably a little bit too much on alcohol in order to be able to relax when he was at the plate about to hit a baseball. And so, anyway, let me just pose this to you. Does alcohol ever enhance the health of a human being at all? Does it ever help them? The answer is no, it doesn't. Does alcohol ever help a person function better while they're at work? No, it doesn't. A lady told me a story yesterday. I'm not going to give you the details, but I'll say this right here. A man driving a truck was hauling rocks, and he managed to turn it over on the road. And this is not his first accident. All I'm going to say is, yeah, you can mess up the body with alcohol. How about that? Anyway, in this study, it was demonstrating that there's very low intake of calcium, and that may be a major contributing factor. Now, I am not a huge fan of calcium supplementation unless it's a raw form of bone or one that's called microcrystalline hydroxyapatite. I think they call it MCHC. They should, for short. It's just too much. But could you imagine what would happen is if a person consumed things like salmon? If you were getting fresh salmon from Oregon, Washington State, Alaska, the Pacific Ocean, I think they even have salmon in Idaho. That's what several people have told me. Sounds like a good place to go fishing this afternoon. You're getting a food that's just naturally blessed with plenty of calcium. But the calcium that you're getting is a food-based calcium. It's not limestone rock quarry calcium that's been ground into a powder and put into a tablet form. That hasn't been prepared by living organisms to make it bioavailable to human beings. So, if you study things like cheese, salmon, there's a vegetable called kale. I think broccoli is a pretty good source. And if you were to put butter on all those things as you would eat them, you would be generously supplying your body some of the elements that have been shown to prevent ALS from occurring. How's that for a radical idea? Kale, broccoli with butter, a salmon fillet with lemon juice, salt, and pepper. Or maybe there's a different, you know what, I think people tell me they really like lemon pepper as a seasoning. But that would be one of the things. So there's just toxicity of the brain. That's a different point. It's been a while since I've studied this, but if I'm not mistaken, there are certain professions, and I'm going to name one or two of them. Do you know what the profession of a welder is? Of course you do. They take metal and they join it together so they can make America work. Okay? Without welders, where would we be? We would be in a whole mess. But they do have to be in contact with all the chemicals that are in those welding rods, and quite often there's a lot of them. But there is very significant research demonstrating that the more you weld, the more you're in contact with these neuro-damaging chemicals that are found in the welding rods. One of the elements that's been shown to do this is an element called cadmium. Years ago, there was a cadmium rechargeable battery plant that blew up and caught fire in India. And I just remember reading about that. This is a long time ago, probably 30 years ago, easily. But all the soil was so heavily contaminated that they couldn't grow crops around there. Now, if I'm not mistaken, what they did was, there's a type of a tree called a poplar tree. And the species specifically they chose to plant around where this industrial accident, this horrible, you know, battery plant fire and toxicity of the soil occurred, they chose the tree called the black poplar. You know why they chose it? It's because this black poplar tree would pull all the toxic cadmium out of the soil. Isn't that something? They just plant a poplar tree, and it cleans up the soil where people can come back and start growing sweet potatoes, or maybe avocado trees. Or maybe they wanted to plant plums there. Plums are excellent. Do you know that plums, when they're dried, are called prunes? And prunes have been shown to really strengthen the bones in women. You know why that is? It's because it contains boron. That was my starting topic this morning when I was talking about people that had severe osteoarthritis. And boron, of course, they gave it to them in the supplement form called borax. I'm not recommending you do that, but you can get boron very easily. So, back to ALS. One of the things you're after is if you've had significant exposure to tremendous toxicity, you got to have some type of a plan. How do you offset that? And I'm gonna give you one or two ideas. Well, let me give you two. There is a type of microalgae that grows in the Pacific Ocean. It's real common. That is called chlorella. C-H-L-O-R-E-L-L-A. Chlorella. Chlorella has one of the toughest cell walls of any plant or substance on the earth, so they have to smash it and crack that sucker open in order to get to the good nutrients that are found on the inside. But the inner cell wall, it has a hallmark of being very sticky, but that's a benefit to us. So when we take chlorella, oh my goodness, does it start pulling toxins out of the body? It binds and attaches to them. You're not better off for bathing your hands in kerosene or gasoline or diesel fuel when you have grease on your hands, right? It's too toxic, because whatever you put on the skin, you're going to soak up into you. So welders, they come in contact with a lot of chemicals, whether they breathe them in, they come in contact with their skin, but eventually there comes a point where it overwhelms your system, overwhelms it, and then your nervous system begins to suffer. I could probably easily do some research on that if I had my laptop in front of me and just cross-reference welders and then neurological diseases. And that could be everything from Alzheimer's to dementia to cognitive decline to Parkinson's to ALS. And so chlorella, you might want to consider looking into that, whoever you are. Now, I don't know if you remember me reading just a little bit earlier. A lot of the people that took boron, they didn't like the way it made them felt. They had what's called a Jerish-Herxheimer reaction. And so taking boron, it started the process of detoxification. Well, sometimes people aren't real comfortable with the toxins coming out of them, but it has to happen. And the researchers said if the people had just done it long enough, they would have gotten through it, it would have been just fine, and they would have been pain-free, and they would have healed from their severe arthritis. Well, chlorella is one of those substances. Sometimes you have to start out with just a very, very small amount of it, because I don't think people really come to terms with that we're living in a toxic world. This is not the Garden of Eden, where the water that's coming down the middle of the Tigris and the Euphrates River is just perfectly, you know, clear and clean. Oh yes, I would love to be in Antarctica where I could, or a glacier where I could take a cup and fill it with pure clean water and drink it. To me, that would be delicious. I've always thought that water, when it's really clean and high quality, it actually tastes sweet. Maybe I'm the only one that feels that way. So the other thing is, when you've got to, let me just say this, you've got to feed the brain. I don't want to ever underestimate the power of nutrition when it comes to healing an organ. And so you've got to eat things that the brain needs. And so what would salmon have? It would have what are called omega-3 fatty acids. And omega-3 fatty acids, sometimes they break them down into what's called eicosapentaenoic acid, or EPA. Or they have the other one called docosahexaenoic acid, or DHA. This is pure food for the brain. And so fish oil, cod liver oil, it's one of the most vital elements for the performance and the function of your brain of anything that I can think of. Okay? I came across a study right here, and this may be like a part and parcel of what you're asking, but let me read this to you right here, because this is really, really interesting. And me, I just kind of scribble all over my notes when I write stuff down. And of course, this is a copy of an article. And the title of the article has to do with, I'm just going to read the simple part to it. Here's an in vitro study that's a test tube study. They use an herb that's called ashwagandha, and they're saying that ashwagandha inhibits Alzheimer's. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Well, what about for the rest of us? What if you have tremendous brain fog? What if you really can't function well mentally? What if you don't have enough mental energy to process information that your job requires? What if your brain is so exhausted chronically that you can't even do the bare minimum to get by? Well, let me read this to you. Okay. There is a substance called amyloid beta. Okay. It consists of 40 to 42 amino acids. I'm looking at a picture of it. You can't see that. Well, it's this gunk, this protein peptide that builds up or accumulates in the brain of people that suffer specifically Alzheimer's disease. Okay. But how exactly this plaque or this beta amyloid builds up, I don't know that anybody really knows. I mean, there's a lot of theories and ideas, so I'm not going to argue that. But what you want is the brain to age gracefully, where you don't lose your mind and your memory as you get older and older. Well, you've got to prevent this beta amyloid from building up. And historically, there's nothing in medicine that does that. Nothing. I've been watching news reports for the last 35 years, and every time there's a new claim that there's going to be a new drug that's going to do away with dementia or Alzheimer's, I pay attention to it. And this has probably been hundreds of medications over the years. None of them have worked. Of course, you know what they're doing. They've got to brag on it so they can pump up the stock price, and then you can get in and get out. Anyway, that's a different topic for another day. But when it comes to the natural realm of things that are found in nature, well, what do people always use? They've used things like ginkgo biloba to improve a person's memory. They use turmeric or curcumin. Okay? That's a natural spice. What about rosmarinic acid? Well, you can find that in things like lemon balm. You can find that in rosemary. Oh, my goodness, rosemary on a chicken in the oven. Talk about smelling divine. There's catechins. Well, where would you get those? Well, that would be found in things like green tea. And there's a substance called quercetin. Quercetin is actually in high concentration in things like onions. So they think that these plant substances are thought to prevent this amyloid beta peptides or plaque from clumping together and just causing this horrible plaque on the brain. Now, when this plaque builds up, well, this is just my short and sweet way of explaining it. It causes your brain to short-circuit and misfire. Okay. Amyloid beta is toxic for the brain cells. You don't want this amyloid plaque forming, okay? in the year 2010, this is the interesting part to me, researchers published the results of a test tube study in which they showed that ashwagandha reduced the toxicity of beta amyloid of the brain, or amyloid beta. In a more recent study, which has been published in the journal Phytotherapy Research, just in case you want to look that up, the researchers looked at whether water-based ashwagandha extracts also inhibit the clumping of beta amyloid peptides. That's plaque in the brain. If you've had an MRI of a loved one and they show plaque in the brain, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You're not better off. So doctors from India call it a brain booster. Well, maybe that's shown to be true. Okay, where does it say this right here? The way that researchers repeated their experiments is they use oxidized cholesterol. That means cholesterol that's already resting, because when you have oxidized cholesterol in the brain, that is what induces the clumping of these beta amyloid peptides or plaques. And so in this study, they used the herb ashwagandha to inhibit the formation of this plaque around the nerves. Okay, I'm just going to read the conclusion to you. And again, I'm so sorry I couldn't take phone calls today. This is a brand new phone system. I can hear it coming from the speakerphone, but nobody can hear the conversation on the air. So that's why I'm just, I guess, talking to you this morning. I hope I've said something that's important. Here's the conclusion of the study concerning ashwagandha. The actual name is called Withania somnifera. I'll spell that just in case you want it. Actually, maybe I should spell ashwagandha for you. Here's how ashwagandha is spelled. A-S-H, like ash, W-A-G-A-N-D-H-A, ashwagandha. Okay, here's the conclusion. The extract of Withania somnifera root, that's the same as ashwagandha, could have the potential to become an effective therapy for Alzheimer's disease patients. Okay, and you know what they're telling you is it might be beneficial when people have it, because ashwagandha has been shown to remove the plaque. Okay, as well as a primary or secondary preventive agent for younger, healthy individuals and patients with mild cognitive impairment. Have you heard the term Generation Z? Okay, that's current generation, younger generation. They are the most highly stressed generation on the planet. Part of it's because the children don't have fathers at home. And that's our government. Since the government's rewarding people for getting divorced, you have a lot of children that suffer because of it, and that's wrong. But you can't stop a person from doing that. People make bad decisions all the time. They also spend all their time on cell phones. And I would gladly praise any parent that doesn't give their children cell phones. They don't need a cell phone when they're 4 years old. Or 12. Anyway, I'll let you decide that. That's your job. But the thing of it is, instead of only tackling a problem once it's fully developed, what if we get ahead of the curve and we start helping the brains function better? Well, ashwagandha is very, very famous for greatly, positively affecting anxiety levels. Do you know what it's like to feel very, very happy on the inside and your thoughts are clear and precise and you can function at a high level and you feel calm and you're just generally happy, you just feel really good? Well, there's a lot of people that don't feel that way. They feel like they're on the edge of a total black cloud collapsing on top of them and there's no way out of this abyss of pain and suffering. They feel anxious all the time. They feel totally uneasy and unnerved and on edge. And they feel like, how am I going to make it through the day? Some people actually have panic attacks. And these panic attacks are horrible. I mean, I have never had one. I don't want one. And I wouldn't wish one on anyone. But man, they are paralyzing. If you've ever seen a person have a panic attack, they usually last about 20 to 30 minutes. They always come out of them. But man, they think they're going to die. I wonder how many people actually drive themselves or have somebody drive them or dial 911 so an ambulance can come and get them when what they're dealing with is a panic attack. They feel as if their heart is about to explode. They can't breathe. I saw a woman one time, she was in Walmart, but I could tell she was having a panic attack, and that's the only thing that she was thinking of. I have got to get out of the store. And she did so very, very quickly. I think her children were in tow, and they were kind of racing behind her. They couldn't keep up with the mama. It was that bad. It's like a horrible impending doom. And so there's all sorts of ways that people can deal with this, but one of the ways, there's an herb called ashwagandha. And of course, with the limited time that I have left, let me just explain a couple of things to you. When you spend the vast majority of your day outdoors, and you get fresh air and sunshine, and you get to watch birds and rabbits and squirrels, and you see deer, and you watch a hawk fly in the sky, and you look at flowers and you smell them, and you just get to touch things, those are usually people that have very low levels of cortisol. They don't have a lot of stress. Maybe you should think about a farmer or a rancher that's just walking out through his meadows, checking on his cows, looking at his fences. Probably a pretty calm, salt-of-the-earth type person, okay? Now, this is opposed to somebody that's indoors all day long. They never go outside. They don't even know what it's like to have sunlight touch their skin. They're terrified of it. They're either on the computer all day long. Oh, my goodness. I could write a book called Stories from the Office of Dr. Morgan. But people just, the moment they wake up, they get on the computer and they sit in front of it all day long. And whether that's Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, what's it called, X or Twitter, that's all they do. It's addictive. Now, those are the people that have high anxiety. Do they accomplish anything? No, they don't. But they're dealing with anxiety. They don't feel good. They're not calm. They can't stand being away from their source of the addiction, which is the computer or the cell phone. Well, ashwagandha has been shown to help lower cortisol levels. Cortisol is a chemical that your body produces, and it has a huge contribution to feelings of anxiety or impending doom or panic. Well, you don't want that. Studies show that when you walk outdoors every day, your cortisol levels are lower. I think I've told you before that eating cherries, you know, a bag of frozen cherries, that way you get the ones that are picked fresh and ripe and they wash them off and pit them for you. Cherries have been shown to lower cortisol levels. Just being touched or hugged or holding a hand, that's been shown to lower cortisol levels, okay? And that's really hard for a lot of people. I don't know if you know that or not. It's real hard. And usually what they do is when a person deals with this, they just run from the topic, okay? But ashwagandha, it has been shown to be extremely beneficial at helping to lower cortisol levels. It's not the only thing. But you know what? What if you tried it and you said to yourself, oh my goodness, I feel so much better. My mind is more clear. Well, hello, maybe you can get used to a brain that functions without all that background, you know, cortisol and adrenaline flowing through your bloodstream. Not good. I know I wrote down somewhere when the program ends. Let me find out where that is. I may be close. Oh, yeah, I'm officially over right now. Thanks for joining in. I'll tell John Paul about the phone lines, and we'll get it fixed for next week. Thank you very much.